And now, back to the story of Madam X, starring Anne Harding and James Stewart with Conway Terrell. The knowledge that her own son is to defend her seals Jacqueline's lips even tighter than before. We're in the courtroom, where the trial is almost ready to begin. In the enclosure near the judge's bench, Alan Cartwright sits at a long table. Beside him is his old friend, Dr. Chesney, who's come to hear Raymond plead his first case.
Has Raymond any kind of a chance at all, Alan?
Well, not on the facts alone, Perry, but he'll make a good showing. He's convinced in some manner that the crime was justifiable. He's got his heart in it. That's always a help.
He's a little young to be swaying juries on sentiment alone.
Well, we'll see.
The court will please rise. The court of general sessions is now in order. The Honorable Gerald M. Darrett presiding. Be seated, please.
The case of the people versus Laura Williams.
There she is. She just come in with Raymond.
He looks worried. I hope he... Good God, Perry.
What is it?
That woman. Look at her. Who is she, Perry?
It does look like... But she can't be, of course.
It is. It's Jacqueline. Jacqueline Hiram is caught on trial for murder.
Sit down, Alan.
I've got to speak to her.
You can't do that. Not now. Besides, you're not even certain that it is Jacqueline.
Not certain. My God. Don't you think I know her face? Haven't I seen it every time I've closed my eyes for the last 20 years?
Oh, that you can't do anything. It's too late, man. It's in Raymond's hand now.
Her son. Her own son. And he doesn't know.
There's nothing to be done now, Alan. Nothing.
Here, sit down right over here and face the bench.
Thank you.
Feel better now?
Yes.
The state ready?
Ready, Your Honor.
Defendant ready?
Ready, Your Honor.
Proceed with the case, please.
The state versus Laura Williams. The defendant is charged with the willful murder of one Tony Phillips. On the night of May 4th, 1937, it is charged that the defendant entered the hotel.
And these, gentlemen of the jury, are the facts that the state will bring forward. By the defendant's own admission, she committed an act of murder. But the law of this state is such that we cannot force her to testify against herself. Therefore, the state will present its witnesses as rapidly as possible. Witnesses who were at the scene of the crime only a few seconds after its commission. The first witness, a woman who had the adjoining room, will swear to them.
It was about 8 o'clock. I was alone in my room and I heard a shot. I ran out into the hall and I...
In the hall. I didn't hear the shot, but when I got out there, there were about four or five people standing around the door of room 518. They were banging on it. I ran up to the door and tried to find out...
And there she was, standing over him with a gun in her hand. The gun was still smoking. She said, "I killed him. I'm not trying to escape. I killed him." That's all she'd say. And then I went downstairs to find an officer. I came back to the room.
And that, gentlemen, is the case as presented by the state. The counsel for the defense has shown no flaw in any of the testimony he's heard, nor has he offered to produce any witnesses to refute this testimony. Your Honor, gentlemen of the jury, the state rests.
Now, please, please, we can't let it just go at that. You've got to speak. You've got to tell
me. No, don't say any more. Don't try to defend me. Let them send the jury out now. It can't make any difference, Raymond.
Why do you call me Raymond?
I don't know.
Well, you did it once before, too.
I'm sorry.
No, please. Please, but you say it as if it had some meaning to you.
Do I?
Will counsel for the defense present his case, please?
No, don't say anything.
Please, I've got to. Your Honor, gentlemen of the jury, you have just heard the state's case, and you have heard no denials by the defendant. The defense has no witnesses to present, and I am frank to admit that the defendant, in spite of my counsel, has repeatedly refused to take the stand on her own behalf. Now, this would seem to indicate that she has reason to be afraid, but we must look deeper than that. Now, this woman, gentlemen, whom you see before you, has admitted her guilt openly. She has nothing to lose by testifying. On the contrary, she has only to gain by it. But still, she refuses. Now, there must be some reason for this. And from my conversations with her before this trial opened, I am firmly convinced that she is keeping silent for one purpose and for one purpose only. To protect and shield someone near to her. someone she loves. Yes, gentlemen, there is a mystery surrounding this woman that newspapers have called Madame X. Who is she? Where does she come from? Whom is she shielding? Whom is she protecting? Is it a husband, a daughter, a son?
No, don't.
She told me she had a son of my age, and she refused to speak any more of him, but he lives. Now, perhaps he faced some great danger. I don't know what, but she knew, and she killed to protect him from it. Now, you will say that this is supposition. Well, it is, gentlemen. It is supposition. But our law states that where there is a reasonable doubt of guilt, the defendant must be deemed innocent. Well, there is doubt here. Not as to actual fact, but as to motive. And the courts of our state have recognized time after time, case after case, that there is such a thing as justifiable homicide.
Let me through here. Let me through.
Order, order there.
Your Honor, I'd like to speak to the counsel for defense, please.
Counsel for defense is summing up his case. This is no time.
Your Honor, if the court so pleases, this man is in my employ. Now, if he wants to speak to me now, I assure you it has direct bearing upon the case.
Very well. Go ahead.
All right, what is it?
Joe Harper. I found him.
What, is he here now?
Sure. I served him with subpoenas and I've...
All right. Now get him up here quick.
Right.
Your Honor, I ask the court's pardon for this interruption. I also ask the court for permission to introduce a witness for the defense.
I object. The counsel has already begun his summation.
A human life is at stake here. Objection overruled.
Your Honor, I ask the court to call Joseph Harper.
Joseph Harper to the stand.
Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole...
Gentlemen of the jury, I have never seen this witness. Now, his testimony may act to the advantage of the defendant. It may act to her disadvantage. But regardless of that, I believe he knows something about this case. What's your name?
Joseph Harper.
Where do you live, please?
618 West 74th Street.
Now, I want you to look at the defendant. Have you ever seen her before?
No.
You don't know who she is?
No.
Now, tell me this. Did you ever know a man by the name of Tony Phillips? Did you?
Yeah.
Did you call him on the telephone at the Hotel Trent on the night of May the 4th?
I guess so.
No, did you or didn't you? Answer the question.
Yes.
And why did you call him?
Well, he asked me to.
When was that?
A week before. He sent me a telegram.
From New York?
No, San Francisco. He wanted me to do him a favor.
What was that favor?
Well, he asked me to get some information for him.
What about?
Do I have to answer that?
What about?
Well, it was about a person that he was trying to...
No, don't answer. Don't answer. Do you hear? No, don't let him kill. Take him off the stand. Don't question him anymore. I'll do anything you want. I'll do anything. But please, please don't let him speak for my sake. Please. True what you said. I was protecting someone. And it was my son. The man I killed was going to blackmail him and my husband because of me. He was going to wreck my son's life and my husband's career because of what I was and what I am now. That's why I couldn't speak. That's why I can never speak. In God's name, please don't ask me to tell. Don't ask me to give up my life for nothing. I'm not afraid to die if I know that he'll be safe. He's my son. My son, whom I've never known and who's never known me. You can take my life as a worthless thing anyway, but please, please let him have his.
Well, she's fainted. Here, get a doctor, quick.
How is she, Patty? Has she come around yet?
Not quite. She's in pretty bad shape, Alan. Where's Raymond?
I asked him to wait to the corridor.
Did you tell him about Jacqueline?
Yes. It wasn't easy, Perry.
How did he take it?
He wanted to come in to see her. I made him wait for the jury to come back. He'll get an acquittal. It's almost sure.
I wonder how much good it will do, Alan.
What do you mean?
Mm. Oh.
She's coming, too.
Jacqueline, do you hear me?
Alan.
Yes, darling.
I saw you in the court. I was so afraid you'd tell.
I wanted to, Jacqueline.
No, no. Better. Better this way. Much better.
I know everything you've done has been for me and Raymond. I can't tell you.
Don't cry.
You told me once that I'd never forgive myself for what I did. I never have, Jacqueline. I tried to find you. Oh, so many times. But I'll make it all up to you. I swear I will. I'll make you happy again, Jacqueline.
I'm happy now. So very happy.
Come here, Raymond.
Raymond, does he know?
Yes, I know, Mother.
Oh. Oh, Raymond.
It's all over, Mother. The jury's come in and they've acquitted you. We can go home now.
Home. I only wish I could.
But you can. You're going to.
Give me your hand, Raymond. My son. All these years I've been so proud of you. And all these years you've thought of me as a dream mother who died long ago when she was young and pretty. Please, try to go on thinking that for my sake.
But I've found you, Mother. I can't lose you again so quickly.
That isn't in our hands, Raymond.
Well, I don't know what you mean.
Now, you mustn't be sad. And you mustn't think too much about me. Because I'm not sad. I'm happy, Raymond. Happier than I've ever been in all my life.
Mother? Mother? Dr. Chesney, what is it?
We found her. Too late, my boy.
Anne Harding and James Stewart step from their tragic roles and speak to us as themselves in just a moment. From a different part of the country, we now present another Madame X and her son, whose name also is Raymond. They will tell their own story, this time the actual story of a mother and son lost to each other for 18 years. Today they're reunited, but up until now have refused all requests to tell their amazing story to the world. This evening they consented to come to the Lux Radio Theater and tell it in person. It's my pleasure to introduce to you the young gentleman and his mother, who present their proof of the adage that truth is often stranger than fiction. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Raymond Meir and his mother, who speak to you from New York.
Thank you, Mr. DeMille. For the last 18 years, I have believed my mother dead. Every time I asked my father about her, the only answer I could get was that she had died when I was 3 years old. My father had remarried in the meantime, and 2 years ago, he died. A year and a half ago, I got a job ushering at the Paramount here in New York, where I am now assistant chief usher. 2 months ago, on my day off, I was in the neighborhood and happened to stop in at the theater, and there I was handed a message. It was sent by my stepmother, and all it said was, "Your mother is in town and wants to speak to you." I have read stories like that, and I have seen such things happen in the movies. Madame X is one, I remember. But I never thought it would happen to me. But you had known, hadn't you, Mother, that someday it would happen?
Yes, Raymond. I just knew that you were alive, and even if I couldn't find you, I could hope I might someday.
Do you know why my father would never let you see me?
He had his ideas of how to bring you up, and I had mine. We couldn't agree. We separated, and he traveled a great deal. And once he took you with him, I never saw you again. But, Raymond, you tell the story.
All right.
I'd rather just listen to you.
All right. My mother tried every means to find me for 15 years, but she never could. Finally, 2 months ago, she did discover a clue to where I had been working. She went to that firm in New York, and as it turned out, the woman she interviewed there was my stepmother. Neither knew who the other was. My mother asked for me, and my stepmother, not knowing her, was very cautious at first. They took a liking to each other, and finally, my mother revealed her identity. Then, my stepmother did the same. The whole story came out then, and convinced of the truth of it, my stepmother sent that message to me at the Paramount. I went to her office immediately, and she told me to go to a certain address where my mother was staying with friends. I went, and when I walked into the room and saw Mother, I thought I must be looking into a mirror. We looked so much alike.
Raymond, I never even asked you. How did you feel when you first saw me?
I don't really know. I was so stunned that I don't know whether I felt anything, really. I can't even remember what I said. And I'm not sure I know what you said, do you?
No, I just remember. All of a sudden, I couldn't see you. I guess I was crying.
Very soon after my mother and I were reunited, we began checking over places we had been, where we might have met. We discovered that 1 month before she found me, she had been in New York, and some friends insisted that she go to the movies with them. They went to the Paramount, and as my mother still says, it was very dark inside. Maybe you are the young man who took me to my seat. And now, Mother, I think it's time we said goodbye.
From Hollywood, we send our thanks to Mr. Meir and his mother, and the hope that their newfound happiness will be with them always. Before Mr. DeMille brings Ann Harding and James Stewart back to the microphone, may I remind you that the Lux Radio Theater comes to you through the courtesy of the makers of Lux Flakes. The familiar blue box has a friendly place in most of the homes you know. These gentle flakes are made especially to safeguard fine silks and woolens. You'll find them kind to everything that is safe in clear water alone. Again, our producer, Mr. DeMille.
Back to our microphone, come Ann Harding and James Stewart, giving us, among other things, a chance to learn from Miss Harding her impressions of the stage and screen in England.
Well, I'm afraid I'm hardly the right person to ask about English pictures, Mr. DeMille. I did make a picture in England, but an American produced it, an American directed it, and the cameraman was an American.
Well, then how about the English stage, Miss Harding?
Well, now, it isn't safe to start me on that subject. Playing on the English stage was a marvelous experience.
Isn't it rather strange that George Bernard Shaw's play, Candida, wasn't given a major production in London for 37 years? In fact, not till you went over to star in it.
Well, I could hardly believe it when they told me that. It was pretty exciting to find that it was such a success. What have you been doing, Mr. Stewart? When I left Hollywood a year ago, everyone was talking about that amazing young actor who lived with Henry Fonda, owned 30 cats, and played the accordion.
We know Henry Fonda married, but what happened to the cats and the accordion?
I don't know. Whatever attracted the cats in the first place, I don't know. They just seemed to come around. They haven't caught up with me yet. Every night I play the accordion to sort of discourage them.
Are the neighbors in sympathy?
Well, I just asked them which they'd prefer, an accordion or a troop of 30 yowling cats. I guess it's a case of the lesser of two evils.
What do they say to that?
Well, sir, I hardly ever get a civil answer. But, Mr. DeMille, I meant to ask you about this. In case you need an accordion player for the Buccaneer, you remember the Stewart's name.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Thanks, Jenny. But after all, even the pirate can endure just so much. Goodbye, Jimmy. You're a very remarkable fellow.
Thank you, Miss Harding and Mr. Stewart. This is your announcer, ladies and gentlemen, Melville Ruiz. Next week's stars and play will be told shortly by Mr. DeMille. James Stewart appeared through courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, Mr. DeMille Paramount, and Louis Silver's 20th Century Fox, where he was in charge of music for the new picture, This Is My Affair. Our play was based on John Raphael's adaptation of the original by Alexandra Bisson. And here is Mr. DeMille.
To the ever-popular Booth Tarkington, we're indebted for the story which comes to us next Monday night. A story whose suspense and delightful romance have ranked it as a classic of its kind ever since Richard Mansfield brought it to the stage many years ago. Its title, Monsieur Beaucaire. I'm especially pleased to announce that filling the title role will be one of the greatest artists of our time, Mr. Leslie Howard. And starring with him, Alyssa Landy. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Leslie Howard and Alyssa Landy in Monsieur Beaucaire. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.